Person, naturally logical, or...
Yeah, you've seen it all.
So
what
do we...
What? The whole world is open to Desire before I... Yeah.
Whole world
so
of
the like test case period.
Right, but it could be that there was some sort of corruption in a previous generation.
Right. Natural. The natural man.
The first person advanced. Yes.
Right, like Adam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like,
well, Adam had special.
But I'm saying, like, but take that situation.
Right.
Well, that's what it says. Yitzhak Leif Adam Ram and Urav.
Right.
Right, you guys hear the question? They want to know, is a person naturally logical or mystical? Or illogical or illogical. Right, mystical isn't necessarily the word I would use, because mystical is already getting to like a particular emotional, like they say there's like logical or emotional, I'd say, right? And one emotion is mysticism, but another emotion would be other things which are against logical. Right, you know what I mean? It's not necessarily opposite. Like, and there's an idea in your religiosity, I guess you could be logical or mystical, but there's more, you know, broader category, besides religiosity is just... Yeah, like in your pursuit of wealth, illogical or emotional.
No one's
not mystical in your pursuit of wealth, right. But he gets the question, right? So it's a more general question than just...
Yeah.
Right, but the question's still the same.
Can you just say logical or illogical?
Yeah, you can say logical or illogical, that's what I'm saying. Right.
Sometimes emotional
is illogical. Yeah, right, emotional, yeah, right. Yeah, you can say logical or... Yeah, right. Right. The only thing is like... I guess logical or illogical is interesting. Good question. How do we form the phrase of the question? I guess the advantage of saying logical or emotional basically is, like, illogical is more just like an absence.
Right.
Like, why is a person illogical? I mean, if a person has a faculty of logic, so then why would he be illogical? So logical and emotional says, well, because you have two different faculties which move a person, his logic, his mind, and his emotions. So now is he naturally, which one's natural or whatever? Right? Like, it's more, you're defining the question better by saying emotional than just by saying illogical. You know, illogical means is illogical or something else, right? It's not really.
You
got to
pick something that is.
Yeah, so you got to pick something that is. So logical or emotional kind of gives you two positives, right? So that's probably a better way to ask the question, right? And mystical is a subcase of emotional, right? You hear that, Al?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So because the one thing Paz says, Yetzer Lev Adam Ram and Urav, like from your youth, you're emotional. Because that's what I'll say, is that the Yetzer Hara has a head start. From your youth, a kid doesn't have a mind and intellect developed. He just has his instincts, his emotions. He sees the world through his emotions and his desires and his wishes. And he doesn't develop a mind and a rational faculty until as he gets older. So that's what they say, is the more childish, primitive, basic component of a person is his instincts. But then... That's like a different idea between, like, Christians have, like, a child that's, like, innocence, purity, the childhood, you know. Like, for us, a child is really just totally emotions, totally instincts. It's not really tzidkas, it's not tzidkas. Tzidkas isn't purity. Tzidkas is a person who conquers his yetzer with his mind. So his kid just doesn't have altogether not shy of that. So the thing is, though, then a person, as he gets older, he develops, his mind develops, and his mind has the capacity to analyze his emotions, to analyze the world from a different vantage point. But it would seem like a person has to do that. It's almost like it's naturally instinctual, emotional, and he has to use his mind, exercise free will, to like use his mind to, you know, step out of his instincts, to realize his emotions are leading him astray, or leading him to something which isn't really reasonable for him to live. It's leading him on a path which doesn't really make sense. You know? So I guess in a certain sense, that's why it's more natural to be, just because your starting point is like instinctual, emotional, and your mind develops, then, you know, you have to, so to speak, extricate yourself from the pull of your instincts and be able to follow your mind.
So like the natural progression would be like the kid form of this ideal person would be emotional, but would eventually, without a corruption, would eventually lead into a logical...
Well, I don't think there's an eventually. I think the problem is the question, maybe the question itself is a mistake, because there's an idea of free will, so there's no idea of natural. Natural is he's free. So man has these two different forces and two different things which are pulling him in different ways, and naturally he's free to decide. So maybe the answer is naturally means he's determined, so to speak, right? But it's like almost naturally he's given the choice. He's pulled by two different forces, and he has to decide between the two. But I'd say in a certain sense, you could say naturally he's instinctual, because that's where he starts, and his free will has to deviate from the course which he begins on as a youth, you know? So as his mind develops, he has to, using his free will would be to, you know, to change the plan of the path that he's on.
So really you would have to determine in the beginning what is best. Why is his path for sure? Like I'm saying, how do we know his path is instead? Like, would it be possible
to start off? Well, the problem is the mind is like the rationality is a function of the mind, and the mind as a tool doesn't develop until later.
Like it's a physical
thing. Yeah, it's a physical thing. Like your instincts and your emotions to eat and all your desires, your physical desires and whatever is part of, doesn't demand maturity. It's just kind of, they're already there in a strong force. But your mind is something which develops. Try to teach ideas to a kid, he can't do it, but I mean, teach him how to eat, I mean, he could eat, he could, you know, pursue his desires, and his basic primitive instincts are all there, you know? His self-centeredness, like most of the great character traits are already in the kid, you know? It's like you say an adult who's being childish. So child is, you know, all those emotions are, you know? So that's just a physical thing. You know, which is interesting also, but that's just the way it is, you know?
So, is there any advantage in, like, let's say you have a child, and a child is completely emotional, so why, is there an advantage to exposing him to logic at an early age, or let him go through an emotional stage?
I think exposing, I mean, there's an idea of cleanup, so I guess it means even though, like, his mind isn't fully developed to the point where he can control himself, until he's like bar mitzvah or thereabouts. But a person's, the faculty is developing, so I would think you want to expose him to it and show him ideas as much as he's capable. It doesn't mean it's like goes from 0 to 60 in 2 right. seconds, you know, it's a process, you know. So the process of as it unfolds, I think as his mind develops, you kind of prep him. That's a deal chinuch. Chinuch, I guess, is you want to, you know, put him in a state where when he becomes fully capable, he'll really have the background that's necessary. I think so. And also, like, your emotions, like a guy could, there are different types of emotions. A person could be steeped in a life of total taiva by the time he's 12 or 13 years old. Even when his mind comes, it's going to be that much harder for him to pull himself away from it. Like, so you wouldn't want to expose him to total, like, intense, you know, you'd think, like, intense, strong, passionate taivas, you know. It's much harder for him to pull himself out. So you think you want to have some degree of moderation, just in terms of chinuch. You know, and halacha kind of does that to a person. You know, even chayachim mitzvahs kind of keeps him in a place where he'll be best prepped. His emotions will be best prepped. You could guide his emotions in a way that he'll be best prepped to be able to use, you know, to make a good decision. It seems so. Yeah. I guess that's the goal, though, in raising the kid, is to be able to best prepare him to be able to use the chira. This I remember, I heard my Masko say one time. He says that there's like a missionary emotion, is that we feel you want to missionize people and like win them over to Torah. But like there's no such thing as that, really. All the best you could do is give them the chira. You know, give them the knowledge that they're free to make a decision. But ultimately, you can't make a decision for them. You can't make your kid a tzaddik. All you can do is you could prep him, give him knowledge that he's capable of seeing the truth, and then he's free to decide. So it's ultimately, it's not your ability, it's not your capacity to make him a tzaddik. It's not, right? That would be like he's determined. You could somehow push the right buttons, he'll be a tzaddik, but tzidkus isn't something you could create, something that he's free to do. So the missionary is trying to win a person over. You can't win a person over. You could give him the knowledge. And then if ultimately whether he succeeds or decides properly or not is not really in your control. It's interesting. Even like, it just reminded me of something I did recently. It's the story of Cain and Abel. So Kadosh Baruch Hu gave him Musar. Gave Cain Musar. You know, Cain originally didn't accept, his cover wasn't accepted, and he was very down and upset and all that. And Hashem gave him this speech. You know, that if you do tshuva, the chet is always going for you. I mean, he studied the thing. It was basically a Musar speech, you know. He explained to him the way his emotions were always trying to get him, but he could rule over it. And, I mean, he really talked to him and gave him a basic idea in human know, human perfection. Don't be so down on yourself. You just got to do tshuva and whatever it is. I mean, but it's a perfectly constructed speech by Hashem, who's a better Baal Moser, who knows man any better than anyone else, right? He gave him to talk to Cain directly, and he told him the right message to basically help him do tshuva, right? And what happened? He killed Hevel, right?
After that.
First, God didn't accept his carbon. He was upset. He was down. God said, why are you down? Don't be down. Don't worry, you can do tshuva. And, you know, the chait's always watching for you, ready at the doorstep, but you could reign over it, but it's always going to be going for you. You know, he gave him a speech. He gave him a whole speech about how to control himself. And then right after that, they were in the field, and he went and killed his brother.
Why didn't he accept it?
What?
Why did Hashem accept it?
Accept what? The carbon? Well, he said it was a poor carbon. He didn't really give his good stuff. He held back. So it means it's like, what? You know, it wasn't he was cheap. He wasn't he could have done better. He was trying to like pay off God with the cheap stuff. It wasn't really an appreciation of the real idea of a carbon though, that God is. He's trying to like send a bribe.
He killed Hevel because he thought Hevel set him up?
No, I think he kind of had a resentment to Hevel. Hevel was accepted and it's like a favorite sibling, so to speak. Hevel was accepted, Cain wasn't, and he directed it instead of recognizing his own shortcoming, he blamed Hevel and went after him. He said he made a fight, and then, you know, started a little thing, and he killed him. But my point is to say, is similar to the same point, is that you think you want to give a person mussar. You tell him, listen, here's the deal. Let's say you talk to somebody to his heart. You really, you know, give him the best mussar in the world. No one's a better Baal Moser than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one knows a person better than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one knows the right thing to say than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he said it to Cain, and it didn't work. Or it did work. It worked to give him Bechira. But then he did Bechira and he chose improperly. What are you going to do? So if a person would give Musa to somebody and then the person ends up not listening, it doesn't mean they're failing. And if a parent gives Musa and raises his kid and the kid ends up going off to the right bad path, it could be the parent's failure. It doesn't mean that there's such a thing as a parent's failing and doing a bad job, but it could be the parent's doing a good job. And he's giving the kid Bechira, but now the kid's a Bechir. Doesn't mean God was a bad Baal Moser when he spoke to Cain and he said the wrong thing. He didn't say the wrong thing. He said the right thing. Of course God said the right thing. But bottom line is the person has free will. And he can't manipulate. There's nothing you can say that can manipulate a person to doing the right thing. I mean, unless you like threaten him or whatever, but that's not the right thing. That just got him to an aggression. But God, that's not what God wants. God doesn't want to force Cain to do what he wants to do. He wants him to be free. And God wants us to make, He wants every person to be free. So the best you could do for a child, a Talmud, anything, is to give them knowledge to make them free. So, I just remember my Moscow said that. I was like, he kind of, you know, in his way. He says, like, you know, when I was younger, I was like a missionary. You know, and that's what he used to do. But he realized that's also an emotion. That's just like an emotion in teaching, is you want to win people over and whatever. But that's not that way either.
It's kind of how, like, I can say personally, that's how I felt like when I first joined Yeshiva.
Yeah.
It's like I felt like I have to let every single person I ever meet know
about this. Right. Yeah, right.
Which part that we're a bunch of missionary? That's how I got my dad, I guess, you know.
Yeah, that's how Christian
got my dad.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. It's interesting.
So the missionaries have an inherent lacking in their whole, I guess, essence as a missionary.
I think so. They're trying to force somebody into
that's
something.
Pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Your missionary.
Like, listen, I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Mimanafshach. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Yes.
Been thinking about on the topic of Bechira, I don't really know how to phrase this question, but phrase it anyway you want.
You're free to phrase it.
But I guess I'm kind of bothered by. I hear two different ways of people talking about Bechira. One way is kind of like you basically never have a moment where you make a free choice, and it's a very rare situation. I've heard that before.
Right.
And I've also heard that just every situation is basically you seem your Bakira.
Yeah, right.
So I guess, like, kind of clear up that area of what it really means to be both there. How does that work?
Right.
Is it just like me moving? Or is it me coming to a point in time where I have to make a decision?
Yeah, that's a good question. I could try to help. I don't know if I could solve the problem fully. But
what is it exactly?
What's his question?
Yeah.
Is Bechira like, I guess you could say, how frequent is Bechira? Is it like every single second you're ready to do a Bechira, or is it like a once in a lifetime, a few times in a lifetime type of thing?
Oh, and if whether or not it is frequent or not frequent, when it's not there, then what is happening? You're just being driven by an emotion. What does that even mean?
So I guess the thing is like an animal, for instance. So an animal is doing things, but there's like a program of his instincts, right? And if you knew enough about biology, animal, whatever, then you'd know that when you put a worm in front of the bird, it's going to jump at it. It doesn't have freedom to do that, it's just like a matter of instinct. But if you put it near the bird, and then you put a predator also near it, then it's not going to jump at it. And, you know, like, there's a certain program of its instincts, and it's all, just like in laws of physics, you could see exactly the trajectory of a basketball based upon all the initial conditions or whatever. So similarly, if you knew enough about the, you know, instincts of an animal, you'd be able to predict what's going to happen. Okay?
That's like a knee-jerk reaction, I think.
Yeah, that's right, like knee-jerk reaction. But it's more sophisticated than that, and there's a lot more factors, and you have to have a supercomputer which can do it. But, like, you can model what's going to happen in the Big Bang billions of years ago based upon it's all subject to sets of laws. Now, we may not know all the laws, maybe more sophisticated than we could actually map in a computer, but basically we could determine how these things work, you know? Putting, like, quantum aside, you know? Yes. Yes, you.
Looking over here. So can we just, before we go down, so can we just clarify that superhero would just be a decision made purely with intellect?
No, I'm not talking about here. I'm just talking about animals. So far, I'm talking about animals. I'm not there. I'm not the people.
Oh, I just thought we're taking direction of saying what it's not. So I just want to.
Oh well, yeah. Areas. I'm not. Well, that's where I'm heading towards. There, not up to that yet.
Okay,
you're skipping. Okay, but we go with animals.
Okay, right. There's such a phenomenon that there's a program.
There's a program. There's just a phenomenon. There's a program. Right? Program of the instincts. I mean, right? Now, in theory, a person does have a, you know, one may argue a person is like that also. That's what I think Freud held. A person is just a sophisticated animal. And you could just, he's subject to a bunch of laws, which are very sophisticated, very complicated. But it's all determined based upon his instincts. And if you're a master psychologist with a good enough computer program that could work out all the whatever, you could work all the stuff out. Right? Okay.
You call this a fair clarifying analogy to say it's like a magnet. You put a magnet by another magnet, it's going to jump.
Right. Yeah, that's good.
Just going to have it.
Right. It's right, exactly. It's just like that. Now it's a much more sophisticated principle, you know. Right. The formulas are much more sophisticated and elaborate and whatever, but... Right. Essentially like that. Exactly. Right? Okay. Good. Right, like for instance, if you take a shot in basketball, if you had a good enough physicist, you'd know whether it's going to go in before it goes in. Okay? You know, taking into account the wind currents and the spin of the ball and the this and the that and the other thing, you had all the formulas in there, it's all there. Now, it may look like it's free to go in or not to go in, but it's not free. It's all there. And you have to get into wind currents. You have to get into, you know, the people in the audience talking and whatever you have to take into account, but it's all in there. So you could say the animal's also all in there. It may look like the animal's freely deciding to whatever, but, you know, it's all in there.
The outcome is determined by various factors.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. And same thing by a person. Someone with an extreme determinist would say that a human being may feel like he's freely deciding to do whatever, to eat a cheeseburger or to not eat a cheeseburger, but it's all just built into his psyche and this and all different factors in his mind. And if a person is a good enough psychologist and a good enough, you know, he'd be able to figure out exactly what he's going to do, just purely in a deterministic way, right? So that's not the position of the Torah, but that is, one could argue that. But The Torah maintains that a person is free. And I think the idea of that is because a person, besides for having instincts, which are purely deterministic, mechanistic, a person has a mind, and his mind could perceive reality, ideas, truths, to tap into a world of ideas, which is beyond just the physical, his physical nature. And he could perceive God, and he could understand, chachma concepts, the realities of the universe. And that those realities lead him to tell him to do a certain, to pursue a certain type of a life, and his instincts tell him to pursue a different type of a life. Right? So in a certain situation, maybe his instincts will tell him pursue women and money, and that's going to make you happy. But his mind will tell him, no, that doesn't make sense, rather ideas is the right way to go, and that's really where it's at, and that's truth, and that's real, and the ideas are, the women are fantasy, and it's not going to make you happy, and whatever, something like that, So now there are these two different, he's being drawn by the world of ideas, and he's being drawn by the world of his instincts. Now, how do you decide? What determines which way he's going to go? So what the Torah of Bechira is that that's up to a person to decide. There's no thing which forces him to go either way. There are two different worlds which clash. And a person is free to decide to listen to what his instincts are telling him and to go with what feels good and, what his emotions, are drawn to. Whereas the ability to believe his mind and to go and to act based upon what his mind tells him. And that action is a free action. When he's faced with that conflict, and he has to, and they're both in front of him, and he goes one way or the other way, that's a free action. That's Bechira. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean every single time a person does anything in his life that he's doing that. Just because a human being has the capacity, like if a person, like a classical example, a person decides whether they want vanilla ice cream or chocolate ice cream. So then it doesn't involve Bechira, because that just has nothing to do with mind, with his ideas and anything. It's just a matter of which emotion is stronger. So based upon his childhood and his this and his that and all his taste buds and whatever it is, he's going to go with this or that.
That's like the animal.
Then you're basically dealing with the person as an animal. And a person's instincts can determine many things in his life. And even when it comes to areas of religiosity, a person's a lot of his religiosity is also based on certain guilt, feelings, and emotional types of draws of religiosity. So it's very complex. The person's very complicated. So I think the model of Bechira would be like if a guy has to decide, let's say, to be from or to not be from or something like that. Or a guy has to decide to go to college. He's going to decide to go to a party college or he's going to go to yeshiva or something. Something like that. I don't know. So it's like the world he sees. His emotions say he'll get more women and no parties and stuff in the school. And his mind tells him, you have women and parties, it's fancy, it's not really going to make him happy, it's just a short-term thing, his mind, ideas are really where it's at, it'll lead him to God, whatever it is. And then he has to decide how to act, so that would be an example, clearly, where he's drawn by these two worlds, and they're leading him in different paths, and now he's going to have to decide. Now, in between, so there's that example, let's say the college example, and then the chocolate vanilla ice cream example. Those are clear, good models of extremes where a person is just an animal and then a person is free. But then all the decisions in between, I don't really know about. I don't know if a person could know at any given instant whether this is actually the hero or just a tug of war of lots of different emotions. Like a person wants to get up in the morning from there. I don't know. I mean, there's, on the one hand, he has an emotion that, he feels guilty, he sleeps in. Another end, there's an emotion, he wants to sleep. Another end, his ideas. And it's like a big mishmash in a person's head. And I don't really know how. I just don't know. I don't know how. I don't know. I'm not sure how to know when. I guess you have to treat every situation as it's Bechira, because you don't know. I don't think you could ever say, oh, well, I'm just being determined anyway, so forget. And that's, maybe that's Bechira. So I think practically speaking, you have to, you don't have a choice but to imagine every situation. And I don't think Bechira has to be going to college. I don't see why Bechira can't be. I want to get up in the morning and now I'm faced with that. I don't see why, even though it could be that it's not often, but it could be it is often. So I think on a functional level, you have to basically treat it as often. Whether or not it is or not, I'm not really sure.
I mean, you should always just do the logical thing.
I think so. Yeah, I think
so. Meaning whether you have the free will or not. Like, even if you were predestined, does that mean you have to do the illogical thing? You should just sleep all day? Or, you know, you might as well...
Right. Now, you may not have a choice, but given the person who's really determinist, who really believes in determinism, they think you may as well do whatever. Whatever he does is what he's going to do anyways. I mean, he doesn't have a choice. I don't think that's what the thing is. I don't think it's a slightly contradictory position. I don't think the person could really believe in the thing. Then what are you doing? Yeah, or do anything. The whole thing is like, you know, it kind of becomes, well, I'm just determined to do anything. It doesn't really matter. I don't think really whatever it is what it is. What I'm going to do is what I'm going to do is nothing I can do.
But now, if you have a position, do you also have to say that it would be just as good to do nothing all day as it is to do, like, things that are logical and
if you're determined, if you hold by determinism, I don't see what's the difference. You don't really have any ability to decide anyways. You just are what you are, so it doesn't really, you're like locked into the thing, so you might as well do whatever, and whatever you're going to do is what you're going to do anyway, so whatever, it doesn't really, you know. But like the very premise of, well, what should I do, is assuming that you have the freedom to do. You know, you should do this, you shouldn't do that. I mean, these people are ethical, and they talk about ethics, and they talk about what you should do, and I mean, no person can't live without living in some sort of a system where you're saying you should, you shouldn't, this is what's right, this is what's wrong. Is what it makes sense. I mean, the whole sense of even coming to the theory itself, the judgment of this theory itself is assuming that you have a mind which is capable of taking a step back and deciding that this is true. Obviously, you're determined to say that and to think it makes sense, so it doesn't really make sense. That's just you're determined to say, and I'm determined to argue, and I'm, you know.
Right. Very premise and if they're of. Trying to get you to convert, and you should be like, I'm going to convert anyway.
Yeah, or I will or I won't or whatever, so what are you even trying to do? Right, so the whole thing is like, exactly. So it's almost like you're bound to like live based upon this thing. And but now, given our philosophical position, there is a thing. It's reasonable to do that because it really might be the case in any instant that you are doing that. But if you hold philosophically no such thing as that, the whole life kind of becomes like an illusion, you know. So I think practically, given that we know it does exist, but I think, listen, if it comes vanilla and chocolate, I say, might as well just say, what the heck, I don't know, whatever I feel like doing, it doesn't really matter. That would be the way a person should have the attitude should be to, or something like that, which really doesn't make a difference. Don't think about it too much, whatever, it's, whatever you decide, you'll decide, it doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't matter, it's just your instincts, it can be whatever it is, and just don't lose too much sleep over the thing, who really cares? You know, but when it comes to something which is significant, now you're in the framework which might be Bechira in any given situation, might be, so you gotta, you know, you have to, you're charged with the Torah mitzvahs. So, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure how to know to go further than that. It doesn't seem like worthwhile to, you know, peg a particular situation, not knock it out of a theory, you know? Yeah.
Well, maybe I just don't know. Is there anything where we say definitively not a matter of a theory?
I mean, I would think the vanilla chocolate, unless you could come up with some, like, ridiculous way how that involves, like, some important decision. But, like,
no, the other thing, I guess, like, there's always lots of influences. Let's say I love chocolate, you know. Right. You know, my family always loved chocolate, so it's a family thing, and I also love the flavor. But I could also make this decision, okay, well, do I want to try something new?
Right. So that stuff, I don't think that's Bechira. Because, like I said, Bechira has to be where it somehow involves your mind saying one thing and your instincts telling you something else.
Well, so let's say I have an attraction to chocolate. Maybe it'd be a good thing to try something new.
But why would it be good? It depends. If there's a theory that if I try something new, then it will help me grow as a person because then I'll break free of my habits and it will give me the ability to perceive ideas and to break free of different, you know, other habits, and fine, then in economy. You know, if you have a theory like that.
Right.
But that's not ordinarily the case. But if your mom is working on your emotion of your habits and you're trying to break free of your childhood habits and you're starting with ice cream, then fine, then it could be that. So I don't think ice cream has to be removed from it, but I would say in general, those types of things are not. You know, but if you'll know yourself if you actually have a good,
rational... Okay, so we would
rational,
say
you know,
something is not, doesn't relate to Bechira if it's... Like, so let's say we're going to say there's only Bechira if it's going to relate to yourself somehow.
Yes.
Like a self-improvement.
I would think so.
A decision in the realm of pleasure.
Yeah, I think so, right.
It's sliding
between
virtue,
two. Yeah, right. Exactly, right.
It's just removed from...
Yeah, right. I think it has to at least be truth versus falsehood. Now, but truth versus... The tricky part is that's not the exact formula because truth versus falsehood could itself have emotions involved. Like, you could have an emotion that I want to be a guy who follows truth. So that's why it's like you can't... You know, it has to at least be truth versus false for it to be believed. If it's not that, if you don't have an idea of this is true, ideas versus something
false. False necessarily, but improved.
Yeah, whatever. Some sort of, something which is like based upon knowledge versus some emotion, something that will make me feel good or I don't know, something like that. If it's not that, if you can't give an idea why rationally I should do this, but anyways I feel like doing that, then it's not going to be b'chira. But even if it is that, it still may not be b'chira, because it may be rationally I should do this, and it will make me feel like a good person if I do what's rational. So rationality in itself, there are emotions which are mixed into a person's religiosity and rationality and all that, you know? There's such a thing as an emotion of being rational. You know, and a person sometimes is uber-rational because of those emotions, right. You know? So you know, rationality to your own detriment, where you're not really taking into account your own emotions, and, you know, sometimes that's also not good. That's a different emotion. You know, you think you're being irrational, but you're really just following a different emotion. Yeah, right, exactly. That's why these things are tricky. So that's why I say, but if you can't give a good rational argument why I should do X,
right.
and then still you feel some pull to do Y, then I'd say it's not going to be b'chira, because why? You don't have any knowledge. That's, you know, they say, it's a good example. This is where Chazal say it. Maybe this is the point. It says, and that's how it goes. Hayom. So then they say, today they have b'chira. Because when they're given knowledge, then they have b'chira. Without knowledge, you don't have b'chira. If a guy has no knowledge of truth of anything, so that's not b'chira. He's not shayach to b'chira. You take a guy, a caveman or whatever, it's not shayach to b'chira, he doesn't have any knowledge. Guy who's just brought up totally in some corrupt lifestyle or whatever. He doesn't have any knowledge, there's no b'chira. B'chira is presuming that the guy has knowledge. So it's only once you have knowledge that you can even talk about b'chira. So that's why I say, it's like a Rebbe's job is to give a person knowledge. Without giving a person knowledge, then they're not shayach to b'chira. You make them feel guilty. Like, for instance, the guilt, the world of religion, which is all guilt. So this is not b'chira. You're just giving him a conflict, creating conflict between his basic instincts and between a guilt.
Emotional conflict.
Yeah, so you're basically creating a lot of emotional conflict in a guy. So he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. He's just going to, you know, different emotions, creating a big tug war of emotions. And whichever emotion wins out is going to win. And that's religiosity for people. But that's not really b'chira, because he has no knowledge. He has no knowledge that Torah is even real or true. So you're just creating a big tug of war, different emotions. So one guy's emotion is to be a Christian, for instance, and to be a very religious guy who goes to church every Sunday. Another guy's emotion is just to go and party and to go to clubs every, you know, Saturday night, the difference or whatever. Different emotions, different, one person follows these emotions, there's another those emotions. But Torah is nothing other than that. Torah is not based upon just following emotions. Torah is based upon knowledge. So if a guy doesn't have any knowledge, then he's not involved in Mechira. Because what's he deciding? So yes, a person who has no knowledge is not Shaykh to the Mechira. Doesn't necessarily mean knowledge of Torah, you have knowledge of other things also, knowledge of ideas, of health, of whatever, of like, of, no, ethics, of morality. I mean, I don't know if you have to have like a fully developed theory, but at least you have to have some ideas. Yeah. Did you find anything wrong about this? Or?
I remember someone mentioned, I think it was Matt, he mentioned to me that he talks about if you're
in Shmona
Prakim.
Shmona Prakim?
Yeah, and I found it. It said, kind of sounds like he's saying just everything to do. Well, I'm ashamed of something. Should call myself and assume the other.
Yeah, no, the Ram sounds like that. I know. The Ram and the Tshuva also sounds that way. He says, you want to be like a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, you want to be a rosh like Yeravam. Right. Everything is Mitzvah B'yad, though. I know. I think that's
the opposite extreme that I've heard. That was the opposite extreme that I've heard, that everything is
Mitzvah B'yad. Yeah, right.
Like, I don't know.
I know, but it's a total Rav, though. He's not saying everything, like chocolate and vanilla ice cream. No one doesn't say that. It's to be tzaddik or rasha.
Oh, okay.
It's always in the framework of tzaddik or rasha. I don't think he means right there. He does he say?
No, I was told that he's like even like to move your hand.
Ram says that, right? I don't know. I don't see that.
I know that. Let's say like Moshe Rabbeinu. Would you say that? This is where I kind of get confused. Where there's like stronger pulls or less stronger pulls, because let's say Moshe Rabbeinu, he's, you know, gets into a situation where, I don't know, he can either choose to sleep with this woman or, you know, to go to learn or whatever. So is that the same decision as?
Well, there is such a thing as like friends, like maybe said on some tape or something. It's like if Moshe wakes up in the morning and goes to learn, that's not b'chira. Because, of course, he's going to learn. Like, he sees the truth. He's already, like, there's a point where a person could advance out of b'chira. I know, like, always, but on autopilot for always, but there's an idea. If a person is in the life of Torah, and he sees it's the good, and he's already decided away and saw that these emotions are silly, and, you know, whatever it is, what's he going to do, watch TV? And he sees that it's not going to make him happy, and that's not true, and they're not this, and it's not, he's not drawn by this. This thing is overcoming a certain area. So then for him, and so far as that's the case, he's not Bechira anymore. He's already made his Bechira. That doesn't mean, though, that a new situation doesn't arise. So Moshe Rabbeinu may not have been Bechira to learn, but it may have been Bechira whether he's going to hit the rock and whether he's going to get angry at the Jews or whatever. That's a new situation. So different, every person has their own nisyonos. That's what I think he said, David Melech was Mispal, that God wouldn't bring him to a nisayon. Because you don't want a nisayon. You want to be able to just go coast on your... Coast on your level and you know, enjoy the benefits of all the decisions you've made. Nisayon isn't so bad in a sense because now you have a chance of slipping. So I mean, new nisyonos could I mean, look, they have opportunity, I guess, to rise. You know, it could be an opportunity to rise to overcome a certain emotion, but at the same time, they could be dangerous. So each person has, but I don't know if there's such a thing as like harder bechiras or easier bechiras, because I don't know if you can do such a thing, because the very premise, that's already making it, like, deterministic.
Right, that's my problem with it.
Seems like once it's free, then it's free.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you could make, like, a form, like, a function, I don't know.
Because, like, could you, I guess, like, to put it in a normal framework, like, how could you ever say, that was a really hard decision? It doesn't mean anything.
I guess, I don't know if really hard decisions, but it could just mean that there's a big conflict of a lot of different emotions, and this emotion went out, but there was, like, there's a big tug of war of emotions, and the quantities were very close.
Right, I'm saying, like, by definition, isn't that situation not Bechira?
Yeah, it could be, but it could be Bechira is a hard decision. Every Bechira is a hard decision. You can't say that was an easy decision. That's what you can't say.
Right.
It could be you can't differentiate between different Bechiras, but presumably you'd say they're all hard decisions,
right,
because they're when you're being pulled strongly by the other side, you know? Other side is going one way, and you know, you'd see it. But I don't know, maybe you could quantify based upon the emotions. It's emotions versus your mind, but there is an idea of stronger emotions and weaker emotions. So even though all your emotions may be lined up one way, but it could be the quantity of the emotions themselves in that area aren't that strong. So a Bechira to sleep with a woman or to not sleep with a woman might be different than a Bechira to, I don't know, eat chocolate or whatever, yeah. Do you kosher chocolate or not? So even though they might both be bechira, but the intensity of the emotion could be that it make it harder. You know, what you're deciding with your mind to overcome might be stronger, you know, make more of an exercise of will to follow your mind. That seems reasonable. Yeah. How's that? That's interesting, right? So I don't think I've clarified everything here, but maybe it's a little more clarity than we have coming in.
Someone who really is not exposed to any chachma,
yeah.
Right? Like, let's say you go to college and there's just this bum in your class, right? So you can say that person is highly unlikely that he's ever been in a real state of bechira.
A bum.
Just a dumb guy who really doesn't think about things. And
yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, nowadays it's hard. I mean, back in the day, you know. I mean, nowadays it's hard, especially, like in New York, there's so much the internet, like, there's just a lot of knowledge out there. And presumably a guy has had some exposure to something. Somebody, it doesn't have to be a Torah and idea, it could just be to science, to ethics, to, you know, to the idea of knowledge.
Right,
I don't, you know.
I mean, he's caught in a crossroads. It's not necessarily that he's caught in a crossroads.
But it could be at some point, like, he realized that, that life of partying and taivas isn't necessarily the only life, and there's a life of knowledge and a life of ideas or a life of, I don't know, maybe somehow that thought has crossed his mind, or a life of ethics. Maybe a guy has seen a life and he's like a low life, and he's dirty in business and dirty in the way he deals with people, and then he has an insight or sees that there's a person who's just ethical, and in a certain sense he may have an idea of an ethic, and his mind may tell him there's such a thing as being ethical. He may have had that thought in his head and pushed it aside. So maybe that could be Bechira. His mind, like that idea of ethics, could come from a certain intellectual assessment that I'm really just small and one person. Why am I better than the other guy? So that he may have, that thought may have dawned upon him, that there is a sense like that, and maybe he has decided to follow that or to throw that away. You know? But I mean, I don't know, maybe he'd have to have, or at least he may have not had a fully worked out theory, but it could be he realized maybe he should investigate it. Sometimes the bechira could be even to decide to investigate something. You know, that could be the first type of bechira. That could also be a bechira. Do you push it on the side or do you investigate? So I don't know. It's hard to... I'd say a person has to have some knowledge. But when you want to get to a particular guy, in a particular situation, it's hard to start. You know, take a guy, some ancient, some Indian in some tribe or whatever. It's probably easier to model that he never had bechira. Now, they're living in a totally primitive society where they do crazy, they're living like animals. So I say, yeah, you never had any access to anything, any sophistication, any ideas, any thinking, any anything. But it's just like, there's a lot of thinking and knowledge in our society. So I'm not sure exactly when you draw a line and say that a guy has knowledge and he turns it away. A lot of people have moments of insight in their life at some point where something talks to them and makes them think. You know, maybe it's a friend overdosing or something. I don't know. You know, sometimes things like this happen or something, you know. Some event in your life which gives you pause and makes you think. Maybe there's something other in life and whatever. And you have a mind. So you have a mind, you have the capacity to see an idea. So a person could be, you know, something could break him out of his emotions for a moment and give him pause and make him think about an idea. And then... he could pursue that idea, or he could try to knock, you know, take a drink and push it out of his mind and hope it never comes back again, you know, and pursue a life of drinking. And then, you know, he becomes an alcoholic, because if he doesn't, every so often he gets these feelings and these thoughts come up, you know. So it's hard to know in particular, that's my main point. But, yeah, I mean, in general, though, I think that's the idea, you got to get a guy knowledge. That's the first step, is a person has to have some knowledge. That's why I think the Torah teaching is about giving a person knowledge. Not just about laying on the guilt, but it's about, you know, showing a person some ideas, some knowledge, giving them the ability to be free. That's the Torah's thing, is to show a person,
yeah.
Right, I guess, the, like, the more knowledge you supply, like, say, a child with, the beginning,
yeah.
Like, that's more knowledge that they'll... like inevitably have when they get older.
Yeah.
So they'll be put in a, they'll always be put in a situation, or more likely to be put in a situation than someone who wasn't supplied that knowledge beforehand. So they can make that real decision.
Sure. That's interesting. I mean, a kid isn't gonna have knowledge.
Right.
So you can't give him knowledge. So I say, you know, let's look at his emotions in line and lead him and force him to do it, and you know. But then you're putting him at a point where when he becomes bar mitzvah, then he'll have the knowledge and he'll be ready to face his emotions.
Right.
He'll be armed with the knowledge that he has to be able to face those emotions, for sure. Otherwise, he's going to lose.
Right.
The emotions are going to kick in. You know, they're strong, and he's not going to have anything to battle them with.
It's still not great, though, because it's not easy for him to be both there either, because he's got emotions leading him in that direction anyway.
When he becomes Bar Mitzvah?
Yeah.
The emotional leading which
side? He knows his dad's going to be married, so he doesn't learn. So he learns.
Right.
Even though he has knowledge now.
Like, yeah, I know. That's why Bechira is complicated. I know.
That's not
no, well, that's why it's complicated. That's why it's hard to... That's why things are a little
bit... Why are you doing good for him when you, like, force his emotions towards the path of
Torah? Oh. Well, I'd say is that you want to give him knowledge. First of all, you don't want his emotions to be too wild.
Right.
Because then he's going to have so much
heart. Do you necessarily want them in line with Torah? In line
by being like, but I mean, line of Torah is just like a moderation. It's kind of the path of Torah. So.
No, I mean, like, should he have, like, guilt about not learning? Like, feel like he wants to learn because that's like.
I think so, a little bit, because there's an idea named Toshul Lishma Balashma.
Right.
And a person's not gonna, you know, you can't trust that a person at 13 is gonna make all his proper, good, bechira decisions. And,
right.
You know, so you want him to be able to grow up and gain knowledge as he gets older and.
Shouldn't be too strong.
No, yeah, I don't think too strong is good.
It's also
yeah, right, I think so. I think you're right. A person's frightened to do an Avera because he's going to get stricken down or he's going to have a guilt attack. I think, yeah, I don't think that's really... he's not going to be able to make free decisions.
Right.
You're right. I think you're right. I don't think it should
be
that.
Right.
Right. I think it should be that way. You're right. I think there should be those emotions, but then they should be able to be, you know, as the Rambam says, a person starts with Yira, and then as he gains knowledge, he segues to Ahava, and he starts, as he gets older, he is able to understand ideas, more abstract ideas, you kind of pull back on the emotional. I think the problem is, I kind of could see the problem is that the emotions, like at puberty, for instance, when a kid comes, his emotions are very strong, and if he doesn't have, like, counter emotions, he's going to be dead. I think that's the Rebbe has a thing about the Adam Rishon, with the Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Ra, is that God gave him, he felt naked, you know, after his emotions, after he did the Chet, he says he felt naked. I think he says God gave him the conscience, like the superego, conscience is an emotion also. And the reason why a man was given that is that the person's emotions are so strong that if the only thing he had to conquer to go against his emotions was his mind, he'd lose. But like the guilt or the superego, the conscience, is like a stabilizing force in his emotions, and it could allow, it gives him the ability to stop. His emotions don't drive him straight away, but it gives him like a counterbalance to his strong emotion, and now he can use his mind and pause and think.
It's a counter emotion?
Yeah, it's like a counter emotion. That's the thing where he said Yetzer Tov. In some context, that's what Yetzer Tov means. Yetzer Tov doesn't necessarily mean your mind. Still Yetzer. Still Yetzer, but it's a Yetzer which is more in line, in general, more in line with Tov. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes that Yetzer leads you to do bad things also, like Rachmanis. Could be like Shaul's Yetzer Tov. Could have told him not to kill Agag because you're killing. Perhaps, you know? So, but it's a Yetzer. But it's a Yetzer which like counteracts the strength of the base Yetzer Hara and allows him to pause. That's why I think guilt is good. Guilt is good in that regard. If you feel guilty about something, you shouldn't just ignore it. Guilt is like a good sign that maybe you're doing something bad now. Don't just follow the guilt, but use the guilt to cause you to pause and to think and to decide. Maybe my guilt is right here.
The sense is just accidental.
Yeah, well, it seems like from the parsha it was made that way. I mean, it doesn't always line up, but it seems like it was given to Adam Rishon. Given to man to help him. In general, it helps. It's accidental because it's not really a God. It can't be, like they say.
It's not
that,
a God,
I think. Yeah, like there's, I think there's some tape where he has this, but the guy him say, some guy, I don't know who, let your conscience be your guide. Oh no, Jiminy Cricket, I think. So.
Oh, Jiminy Cricket, yeah.
Let your conscience be your guide. Huh?
Guyam?
Guyam, not Guyam. Gain. Gentiles. But it's Jiminy Cricket, I think. Let your conscience be your guide, right? Let your conscience be your guide. But that's not true. No. Your conscience shouldn't be your guide. Let your conscience be a reminder that maybe you should be a guide for your guide. It's not a guide itself, because it doesn't exactly line up. Like I said, sometimes your conscience will tell you that you'll feel guilty about doing a mitzvah.
Is there like a ridiculousness in that? Like, is it good, or like, is it accurate, or is it not accurate?
No, I mean, like, it's 90%, let's say, or it's whatever, some percent.
But it's never actually pointing you, like, it's never actually directing you right at the thing.
No.
No,
but you know what it's like, for instance, let's say, like, you're trading.
Trading? Okay.
Yeah, let's say you're trading stocks.
Okay.
So there's such a thing as, Avi, you could confirm this or not, but if you're trading, let's say you'll have, like, an indicator. You know, an indicator. Like you have a stock, you have a certain indicator that when the stock goes to a certain price, it makes a ding. You know? And then
makes a ding.
Like there's a certain pattern in the movement of a stock that you think you want to buy it at. You know? So let's say you'll have the computer or the program set up that when it does a certain move, then it'll give ding. And then you'll look at it and you'll look and decide whether you want to buy or not.
Right.
You know? Because you don't necessarily want to buy when it does that pattern, but that pattern means maybe there's something here. And then you look into it more closely. So you'll say, yeah, but the ding doesn't mean buy, so therefore the whole thing's worthless. But that's not true. The ding means, say, percent of the time it means to buy.
It would be accurate to say the ding doesn't mean that that's necessarily the trend that you're looking for.
Yeah, the ding means that it's a good, oftentimes there's a parallelism, there's a correlation between that pattern and when I want to buy. Now, my mind is more discerning than just that one little pattern. to my mind, when I see that thing, I look at the stock market, at the S&P, and I look at this, and I look at the 52-day high and low, and I look at a lot of different things. And the program can't look at all the million things that I look at. But the program could get a superficial thing to tell me, this might be it. Look, start looking now. Now's the time to apply your mind, because this is 80% accurate. You know, so there's such a thing as an indicator, which causes you, tells you, look into it here. So say it's like, the conscience is an indicator. It's oftentimes the it's in line with it's opposed to your instinct. That's what for one thing. It's opposed to your base instincts, and oftentimes your base instincts lead you astray and lead you away from truth. So I'd say more often than not, your guilt will get you in a good direction. You know, so it's a good indicator that if you're doing something and you feel guilt. It doesn't mean just listen to your guilt. Sometimes you'll say, listen to your guilt. Think it over. Say, listen, that guilt itself is an emotion. I'm going to do it anyways because it's a mistake. But all other times you'll say, oh, that guilt, I see the guilt. Oh, you know what? It's a good point. I shouldn't do it. So it just kind of like without the guilt, you just go straight after that emotion without any pause whatsoever. Here, it gives you a moment of pause. It allows you to stop and to think. And if you shut it down and you close down your guilt faculty and you say, guilt is for whatever, guilt is for Gaia, and it's not for us, we don't do guilt, then you're going to end up being overcome by your instinct very often. Because you need a pause. You need to stop. You don't stop, you go right at the chayv. Nothing stops you. You need to stop for a moment. And your moments of hesitation is where you have the capacity to use your mind. So it allows you to use your mind. That's the idea of the ding on the stock. It allows you to stop and use your mind and think. You know, you're in the middle of the trading, everything's whatever. The ding kind of says, stop, think, listen, look into the thing. So I say your conscience could work that way. Could cause you, it could minimize the strength of your instinct by creating a counter instinct. And now, how do you decide between your two instincts? Oh, now you can use your mind.
Where do we see a correlation between, let's say, feelings of guilt and
truth?
And, yeah.
Because they say the feeling, the reason why the correlation is because the feeling of guilt is basically, is like a reaction, is the opposite to your basic core instinct. It's like your basic instinct. Call your id is your basic core instincts, and your superego is like it counters that. And you want to feel like a good person. It's like your conscience is you want to feel like a good person. You want to feel, you know, approval, authority, things like that. So that's counters your instinct, your base instinct. So your mind also is contrary to your base instinct. I mean, your mind tells you that you're following your base instinct all the time is not going to get you where you want to be. But not for the same reason as your superego does. Your superego is just it's a different emotion. A different emotion which is in response to your base instinct. So your mind is in response to is like kind of above both of them. But I'd say it's like, in the basic sense, is that both of them tell you don't just go sleep with that woman because you want her, for instance. You know, your superego because you're going to be a bad person. You're going to feel, you know, you shouldn't, you're better than that. Your mind, because it's not true, and it will take you away from reality, and you know. So for different reasons, but they both end up taking you away from the base instinct, you know. So that's why they end up having a correlation. But sometimes, for instance, you should be following the base instinct. The person may feel guilty about really drinking basar, eating basar yayin on Yantif, because he feels guilty about enjoying himself. So that might be a case where his base instinct tells him to enjoy himself and his guilt feels guilty about it, but he has to overcome that because he realizes that's just another emotion. That's just his guilt, so he can't just follow it. But often, in general, I say the Torah is more in line with that than with... But sometimes not. I mean, sometimes religiosity is, you know, religious emotions could be in line with the superego. And those would be very misguided. So... I think the main point is like that your instincts are usually conflicted, and conflict is good because it allows you to stop and use your mind and resolve the conflict. A person who's not conflicted is just going to be acting compulsively. Conflict, internal conflict, is good insofar as it forces you to resolve the conflict somehow, and then your mind could act. If you just go on autopilot, you're never going to make good decisions, because autopilot isn't good. You know, it's through using your mind. So conflict kind of forces you to stop. On the conflict, I want to go now. Oh, well, let me think about it. You know? If you didn't have that, then you just... Then you'd be on autopilot, and then the job of your mind would be to stop the autopilot. And that's much harder to do than to resolve the conflict which comes up. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's interesting. It's a much harder thing to stop yourself when you're just on coasting than to... If you've already been stopped by a conflict, internal conflict of your different emotions, then to decide which way to go. That's like a whole different thing. Much easier than if you'd have to just totally counter your whole personality without any help. So it helps. Your conscience helps you. Yeah.
Is there a specific phenomenon of like going on autopilot, or is that just...
Yeah, that's when you, it's called getting drunk or high. Then basically you're shutting off your conscience, and then you basically can do anything.
I'm saying we have that, let's say, in like everyday life, someone's not, you know, like...
Who doesn't have it? A person who's always drunk?
People who are always high. Is that like an inhibited state, you know?
What?
You have this phenomenon where a person is just you know, some of it is kind of, you know, floating, you know, constantly that, let's say, drinking or this or that.
I mean, I think it's like a person has no conflict. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess a person could.
You
don't feel any guilt at all about anything, just no shame, no superego, no anything, just totally remove
the
conscience.
Yeah, that's what you were referring to, that's like, I guess, it's a very specific phenomenon that could just happen in any number of ways.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess, it, I don't know. I mean, it definitely could happen artificially using alcohol or drugs.
Right.
You know, that's why people do that, that's why people go to that. Because they have this conflict, they want to live a certain type of life, but they have this internal sense, is that you're losing, this isn't the right way to live, and this isn't you, and this is this, or whatever kind of guilt and conscience person has. So by drinking, you kind of could push and ignore those things, and you can just do what you really wish to do, without the conflict. But a person doesn't have any conflict at all, I don't know. It must be this psychologically possible, but I'm not sure what would be the explanation for it.
Okay.
The most likely person would be someone who is more religious, probably, because then he has less power.
Yeah, right. Could be. I mean, that other way.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah, going that way, you mean.
Right. If you go more religious, then you...
But even that person, I feel like...
Closer to the truth.
Yeah, right. But it depends. Even that person is going to have the... You can't turn off your instincts either, you know? Yeah, right. Right. That's like what happens with these priests, the celibate priests. You celibate, then you end up sleeping with these little boys or whatever, you know? You can't do that either. You can't forget about either side of your personality, you know? You're bound to be conflicted. But the conflict is helpful. That's what I think Gary Moskowitz said that once. It's like he liked conflict. He said he's a little masochistic, but, you know? He says whenever he has conflict, he thinks it's good because it helps him learn about himself and helps him work on himself. And you know, so people think, oh, I don't have conflict, it's just dry. You know, it helps him figure out his emotions and helps him learn about himself. And you know, but the conflict is the way you can really gain insight into your, you know, into your nature, into your problems, into your head. It can help you make decisions.
It's funny because you think of a person that has a happy life would be someone who just has no conflict, but it just sounds like a part of it.
Yeah, well, it's true. I think there is a certain sense is that when a person really, on that other side, a person who's really made good decisions has a certain shalom, like a harmony, where a person sets up a life where he really, that's what Torah's goal, I think, is to really create a harmonious life. But that's where a person, like Shabbos, for instance, is a model of that. It's like a yom, which is a person has oneg and is involved in ideas, and you know. So it's like the life of Torah is a life which really has a proper balance between the both parts of his nature. And it satisfies him, his instincts are satisfied, and at the same time he's involved in ideas and in truth and knowledge and a life of, you know, a life which he knows is real. So then, in general, he's not going to be conflicted because he's found and struck a balance. That's the guy who could really be at peace. That's the only way the guy's not going to be conflicted. But still, I mean, well, there's going to be situations that come up which are conflicted. But then you could overcome those. You know, use those situations. Or Master was talking about, use those situations to overcome it and remove that. Once you work on that area, then you, in general, want to be plagued by that conflict. But there's always other areas, you know. But in general, the more harmonious person is the person who's the person of Torah, because he's managed to strike a balance between these two different competing trends. But a person who's like a celibate totally turns off his instincts, or a person who's just a party animal totally turns off his conscience is going to be, you know, he's stuck because he's turning off in part. The only way is to basically find the medium between the two, which is the Derech of the Torah. Exactly what the Torah does for a person. You know, that's Torah Mitzvos. Yeah, it's a good point. And that is the good of the life of the Torah. The Mitzvos essentially create that moderation, that state of moderation where a person is, his mind, his instincts are satisfied, but his superego is satisfied also. He satisfies his instincts, but not too much. You know, so he could feel like he's a good person. At the same time, he's going to get satisfied.
I feel like if you don't have conflict, that means you have, like, no free will. Like, that brings back to that, but it's, you're never in conflict. There's no choice for you to make. It's always...
Right. Well, the thing is, if you end up making your choices, and now you're on the good path, and you don't necessarily need to make choices, you don't need free will. Free will is like gets you to where you want to be. In theory, if you chose free will and now you're on a path of just of ideas and knowledge, and you know, for instance, like the malachim seem to be like beings who are just involved in knowledge and ideas. So they're an olam haba and a bechira. They're just involved in ideas all the time. So we don't need bechira. Bechira is like a means to get us the way a human being gets to the good. So, but the good isn't the bechira. The good is the involvement in the good. Yeah, it's a tool, but that's man's man. Man is the cause of his own good. It's through his bechira, you know. But you don't need the bechira if you have the good, you know. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Alrighty. Where are we at here?
What's this thing for?
What's that? This is a ball that you go in and you roll around in circles.
But I think if you're over here, actually, Rabbi, I think